obviously the elephant in the room with this movie is where it was shot at Disney.
Uh-huh.
Sure, you're getting plenty of questions on that. My question about it is, are you at all bummed that Disney didn't come after you?
No, absolutely not. Maybe surprised a little bit, but not bummed. It's coming. We've been working on this movie now for almost 3.5 years. So the last thing I want to do is, you know, be mired in some, you know, courtroom battle for another God knows how many years. So I was very, you know, happy that, you know, we weren't shut down right away after the first screening at Sundance. So
okay.
Other people who, you know, would have hoped that would have happened, I don't know, to stir up more publicity for the film, but
sure.
Personally, I'm very relieved that that didn't happen.
When you were preparing to do this, and obviously this is a great concern that they would come after you, or just shut you down in the middle of doing it.
Right.
Why'd you roll the dice on something like that? Why'd you take that big of a risk, not having any idea if you would just be completely shut down and get 5% of the footage?
Well, it started off as an experimental movie. It had very small beginnings, and it kind of snowballed from there. It wasn't like I initially set out to make, you know, the movie on the scale that it turned out to be. It just it kind of grew and grew and grew. I've said it before, but originally I was just going to go in there with some friends of mine and actually, you know, shoot it myself. And it wasn't until I did some more scouting and I realized that, you know, it's going to be really hard for me to direct the actors and, you know, shoot the picture, especially, you know, because we're using the Canon 5D, which is a great, great camera, but has very, you know, the depth of field can get pretty shallow. So, you know, we would have all been out of focus. And, I wouldn't have been able to do both at the same time, especially in that environment, you know. So, and then as things progressed, I started thinking, well, you know, this is L.A., there's a huge wealth of actors. Why don't we, you know, I just get a casting agent and do some casting. So we started casting and it just sort of grew from there. And then once you get, you know, professional actors coming on board, you know, scheduling becomes an issue. So it's like, oh, I'm going to have to get a assistant director now, to help with that. And then, you know, more and more people come and now it's like, now we need to, you know, get transportation for all these people. And it really became this thing. But initially I just thought, you know, I didn't want to dwell too much on the legal stuff because I really just wanted to concentrate on the story. But morally I felt like, you know, this brand or this company is such, you know, a huge part of our culture that to not be able to examine it or, you know, critique it or satirize it, it was just seemed, you know, like morally wrong. It felt like that was to say that it's off the table and to pretend like this place that so many people go to, you know, that's so iconic doesn't exist and you can't, you know, make a film about it or in it, just seemed like, it just seemed wrong. So it was just sort of like a gut thing. And then I had a very personal ties to it growing up. I used to go there every summer with my dad, and the two kind of became one in my mind. I'd associate him with the park and the park with him. And this was, you know, started off sort of a writing experiment when I was working on the script to just get it off of my chest. And I wrote it. I thought, no, you know, of course, no one's ever going to be able to make this movie. And I shelved it. And I wrote two other scripts after that. And then I learned about the Canon 5D and I started going into the park, and just sort of, you know, playing with it, with, taking my kids to the park. And I was just so amazed that, you know, the images it could produce, you know, on these dark rides, you know, without additional lighting or anything like that, that I started to think, well, you know, this is something that could, you know, actually work. And, you know, it wasn't like we were using equipment, bringing in, you know, studio equipment or using any or a camera that, you know, a lot of other people in the park weren't also using just to capture their own, you know, home movie. So
the camera, it looks like a still camera, actually. Am I correct in that?
It is. I mean, it was designed as a still camera, and it just has a video mode like most still cameras do now.
How much would you estimate you spent? I mean, even though obviously Disney didn't approve this, how much money did you end up spending? How much money did you end up giving to Disney through ticket sales and, and concessions or anything that you had to do? Because you had to obviously had to buy dozens of tickets and passes.
Well, yeah, we bought we were in Orlando for 10 or 11 days, and we were in Anaheim for 2 weeks. And for the principal actors, we got season passes for everyone, which was cheaper than buying daily passes.
Sure.
You know, I obviously had a season pass, and so did our cameraman, so we could go back and get B-roll stuff whenever we wanted, you know, and not pay anything. But obviously, you know, taking a bunch of people down to Orlando, you know, most of our people were L.A.-based, so Anaheim was easier, but taking them all to Orlando and, you know, getting hotel rooms and everything is a little more expensive down there. It wasn't cheap. We probably spent, you know, anywhere between $50,000 and $60,000. I mean, it's like a family trip, you know, but with, you know, I don't know, 12 or 15 people. So, you know, just going there with your family can be quite, you know, hard on the pocketbook.
I will say I do have to personally thank you for not making it found footage, because I think that genre is drying up and it's going to be really rough to watch.
Well, you know, that was the main thing, was that I didn't want it to look like someone's home movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the first reasons why we decided to shoot it in black and white, because that instantly sort of, you don't watch a lot of home movies in black and white anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted it to be cinematic. Because again, you know, just watching your own home movies with your own home family, I mean, with your own family on vacation, can be grueling, especially sitting someone else down and saying, here, you know, watch our trip to Orlando this summer. So I was like, in order for this, you know, to have some appeal and to get people, you know, to not walk out, I think, you know, it's going to need to be a cinematic. And in my mind, it was even, you know, I wanted it to be more locked down, but just due to the pressures of the environment, you know, we had to do more handheld than was originally planned and stuff like that. But I tried to keep it as contained as it could. You know, I wanted it to have a real, you know, cinematic feel to it.
What was sort of just directorial influences and even in the story? Obviously, you said you had a personal connection because you associate it with your father. Were there many things that happened? I mean, I'm hoping that not all of it's true, but I mean, are there any real life experiences that you brought into this?
Yeah, I mean, none of it's true. My father never followed, you know, stalked girls around the park or anything like that. Or, you know, or as far as I know, was never, you know, absconded by Siemens employees and taken to some secret underground lair. But, you know, like just the feelings of being on like the Wedway People Mover, you know, with him. And, you know, that was one of the rides that almost never had a line during the summer. So that was one of my favorite things, just because it was long. You got to go around the park and you didn't have to wait in line for it. But the other things were just, you know, the waiting in line and the, you know, extreme humidity and how trying that can be on people. And then when I started thinking about writing it and going back there, I'd always bring one of my kids with me because I felt like it was too creepy to go there. It was like a grown man walking around alone.
Yeah.
Although I did see a lot of grown men walking around alone. So, you know, so stuff started to seep in. But I was looking around and seeing, you know, like some families having an amazing time and then other families just, you know, on the verge of disintegration and, you know, looking like they were about to, you know, get a divorce right there, because it can be tough. So, and expensive.
Were you going for, like, you know, Lynch kind of? I mean, it seemed very David Lynch in several scenes.
I love David Lynch. I didn't set out to make a David Lynch film, but you know, he's obviously a huge influence. I have most of the same influences, probably a lot of other film people. You know, I love Kubrick, and you know, I was originally saying like it's going to look like I want to shoot it, you know, anamorphic and have it, you know, look like a David Lean movie, but you know, we just couldn't get anamorphic lenses onto these cameras and sure. and not look like just regular tourists.
Are you aware of any policy changes that have happened after this, or have you tried to go back and they like, it's that guy?
You know, I haven't gone back, and I've had no contact with them, and I'm not sure about the policy changes, if they've made any. I imagine they're probably a little more vigilant, but like I said, you know, I think they still allow cameras, so
sure.
anyone could do it.
There is so much talk, and obviously we spent a lot of time talking about the Disney aspect and doing it without proper approval. What is there that you really want to say about the movie beyond that? Since that's always those first questions, is there any sort of like something that you want to say about the film? Something that you feel maybe is getting lost in that greater fascination?
Well, you know, I think it's a story about, you know, our culture just as much as it is about Disney. And, you know, for me, it's, I just really, the park itself, I realized, is sort of, for people who have gone there their whole lives, it's become more than, it's transcended being just a normal theme park, and it's almost a religious experience or a corporate religion for some people. And there was a moment when I was at the Fantasmic show with my kids, and Mickey's like on top of this mountain battling all of the Disney villains. And all of a sudden he disappears from the bottom of the mountain. He appears at the top of the mountain in this, you know, hail of fire and brimstone and lasers, and you know, the music crescendos, and he's dressed now as the Sorcerer's Apprentice, and all the audience just gasped, and you could see like they had chills. And I realized like, wow, these, you know, this place means so much for so many people. You know, it's gone beyond just being, you know, an amusement park, you know, or Six Flags or something like that. And so I was really trying to, you know, capture that feeling of, but it's, you know, of that mania, especially, you know, at the end of the film. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Sure. Absolutely. Was there anything you didn't get? I mean, is there just that, you know, if only I had a little more time shot list that you missed that you either had to recreate or kind of just cut and run?
Well, we got, you know, we actually got everything on our shot list, but I mean, there were things that I wish, you know, were more in focus, or, you know, things like that. You know, we really planned it out ahead of time with, you know, and if we hadn't have done that, you know, I don't think we would have gotten a quarter of what we needed. So it was just a lot of, you know, meticulous planning and going there day after day without actors. You know, we walked the whole movie with the crew about 9 times before we ever brought in any actors. So we knew, you know, what the blocking was going to be and where the camera was going to be and even where the sun was going to be going into it.
I was looking at the behind the scenes footage and the information on the DVD, and he talked about getting a wheelchair so you could get, you know, especially the kids back and forth from different areas of the park. And yeah, Disney didn't notice it, or at least they didn't say anything if they did notice it. What kind of reactions were you getting from just the other patrons of the park?
Really, we weren't getting any reactions at all. And, you know, I was particularly worried when we brought the character. He's, I think, titled as Fat Guy on the Scooter, but he's Big Red, and he's sort of kind of a red herring. You think maybe he's, you know, gonna kidnap one of the kids or something like that, and he turns out just to be this nice southern guy. But I was really worried that when we brought him in that he was gonna start getting, you know, attention from either patrons or security or whatever. But as we were walking around, we saw people even, you know, 10 times as weird as him. And, you know, people get dressed up and go to that park. it's really, especially in Orlando, you see all sorts of people. So I think we were probably, you know, one of the normalest looking, you know, groups of people walking around.
Was there anything in the planning stage that you said, we're going to have this done? And then when you started looking at it, you kind of even said, you know what, that's going to push it. And we're not even going to try it.
Yeah, there was a moment, and it never made it into even the first cut of the film, where he's trying to convince his son to go on Space Mountain, and he sort of goes into this like fever dream speech and stands up on top of a trash can right in front of the ride, and it's sort of like his St. Crispin's Day speech from Henry V, and he's, you know, starts, you know, talking to his son, like, who's, you know, terrified to go on this ride. He's trying to convince him to go on the ride. And slowly a crowd gathers around and, you know, starts listening to the speech. And then there's, you know, a big applause at the end, and the kid says he'll go. And then he jumps down from the trash can, and, you know, there's no audience anymore or anything like that. And they just walk onto the ride. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, that's probably going to be a little tough to shoot right in front, you know, in this very visible area. So we green screened it. We got background plates, and then we did it on green screen. But it just, I don't know, it didn't seem to fit into the overall picture of the film. And it wasn't necessary in the end. So
what do you follow up with on something like this, with one that made such a notice?
A quiet chamber piece, you know. No, seriously. I mean, the best moments of the film were when we got out of the park. Mm-hmm. There was no thrill in shooting inside the park for me. I think some of the actors said it was thrilling for them and it helped them with their acting, but for me, it was just like, let's just get this shot and move on and get out, you know, and you know, to the next stage of the film, because you know, I convinced all these people to come on board on this, you know, like crazy journey, and you know, everyone was sure no one would ever see the film, first of all. And I was like, no, you know, if we make the, you know, the best film we can make and not just rely on this gimmick that everyone's going to point to, you know, I think, you know, hopefully it will rise, you know, and people will see it or seek it out. And that was the goal, was just to finish it and have it. A final cut that, you know, was completed and in the can. We did a film out, and when we screened it at Sundance, it was actually screened on 35mm. Mm. I think it was only six other films that year that were screened on 35. Mm. And so, you know, once it was made, it couldn't be unmade, and that was as far as I was looking. It was just getting that first screening at Sundance.
Congratulations. A very interesting film and a great story behind it.
Thank you for talking. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot, Kevin.
Thank you.